This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geeks, show number 647 with Doug Milburn, recorded on May 22nd, 2025. Here at Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all the favorite tech gadgets that find their way. News, reviews, product updates, and conversation all through the Average Tech Guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in beautiful Bellevue, Nebraska. Because we'll post the show with some world-class show notes. I got a few of them on this interview out at TheAverageGuy.tv. Big thanks to our Patreon subscribers. Appreciate you guys every single month that are on that Patreon team. Super helpful in what you're doing. If you want to join that team, head out to TheAverageGuy.tv/Patreon. You can jump on that team. There's some space. We have one plan. It's $5 a month. You can do it 1 month or as long as you want. Many of you are long-term supporters, and so I appreciate your commitment to the network. It always helps pay the miscellaneous bills that are in here and keeps me coming out every Thursday night. And then if you want to use that Amazon affiliate link, it's on the homepage. Head out to theaverageguy.tv, upper right-hand corner. You'll see a statement there that says, as an Amazon associate, I earn from qualifying purchases. If you click on that link, take you through to Amazon, we'll get credit for it, and nothing more you need to do at that point. Thanks for doing that as well. Big thanks to Mark Robson, who joined us last week. Feels like a lot longer ago. I've done 4 or 5 podcasts since then for work. Big thanks to Mark, who joined me. Good episode. If you haven't gone out and listened to it, make sure you eat before you get there. You know, Mark, it's the big barbecue and grill show. Some good conversations. He brings some good pictures in. And that's available for you now. Head out to theaverageguy.tv. If you haven't listened to it, go back. It's worth listening to. You know, you get your grill on. And if you haven't picked that up yet, you should. You should. So check it out today. Mark, thanks for coming on. The next hour or so, we'll spend some time with Doug Milburn. He was the co-founder and chairman of 45 Drives. You guys know 45 Drives. You know it. You just don't know you know it. Either you know it and you know it, or you know it, but you're going to know it because we're going to spend some time talking about that. 45drives.com. This is a harking back to our home server show days. And, you know, we talked a lot about server and server storage and hard drives and all those things that come along with it. You'll hear on the episode, I have a little bit of suffering from some allergies. So the voice changes a little bit when we're in there. But Doug and I spend some time together talking about 45 drives. And I think you're going to find this super interesting. For those of you who've come in on the title, you don't have to wait any longer. Let me bring in this interview. For those of you who are listening live, you can continue to chat with me. We'll be live here. For those on the podcast, you'll just enjoy the interview. Here we go. I'm here with Doug Milburn from 45 Drives. Doug, great to have you on Home Gadget Geeks, and welcome.
Thank you for having me, Jim. Appreciate it.
Doug, let's get to know you a little bit so the audience knows who we're talking to. You've got a fairly, I watched some YouTube videos with you on them. Folks can get to know you that way, but you're here. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Doug.
Sure. I'm president and co-founder of 45 Drives and part of another organization that I helped found with my co-founder. I developed a love of computing a lot of years ago. To date myself, started off with 6502 microprocessors and Commodore PETs, machine language programming. Got to assembler, that was on the C and whatever else. So anyway, I go back a long time and I won't bore you with the long track on it. But
now, there's a lot of guys shaking their heads because they have gone that same path with you, by the way.
I say to all our young software developers, I say, guys, you guys got billions of cycles every second. How come you can't make things go faster? We had a million when I started.
Well, you had to know every bit of the memory to make sure it was going in the right places, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about the journey. You said co-founder. Tell me a little bit about the journey to 45 Drives. How that for me, that's kind of come on the scene just over the last couple years as I've heard from audience members who are considering using 45 Drives equipment for their home servers. We'll talk about that here maybe a little second, but what's the 45 Drives journey?
Yeah, a cool question. Let me see if I make it succinct because I could talk all day about it.
Sure.
We started a company called Protocase. So anyway, I had to do with another company. I started doing materials research and the like. My co-founder, who worked for a company, built marine navigation electronics. And anyway, we struggled electronic enclosures, metal parts, like when you're innovating.
Sure.
Tough to get. We developed, anyway, the whole protocase, protospace side of things, developed the company. We really totally rethought manufacturing on how to make, you know, innovation quantity parts for people without making them wait. Because when you're innovating and you have to wait and somebody says 4 to 6 weeks, it's like, what? I got to put my project to bed.
Right.
Anyway, we solved that problem. And that company's now, you know, it's a force. It's the number one in its sector. And anybody, any tech company buys from Protocase and aerospace, the Protospace. Anyway, company came along around 2010 called Backblaze. A lot of people might know Backblaze, cloud storage provider. They were a really cool bootstrapped startup when we first met them, trying to reinvent the storage server and it take an order of magnitude out of its cost and through large data storage. We worked with them a whole bunch. They did a really landmark blog where they released their work to the public, and it's called Petabytes and a Budget, how to build, I forget exactly, it's how to build a data storage server that's about a tenth of the cost per unit storage. And anyway, we supplied for people who want to build, we supplied the chassis for it, which was their chassis. We started selling chassis to people. And long story, we started building servers, and then we evolved. We came together with a couple other companies. Netflix came to us at one point. So did another streaming company, said, would you build storage servers for us? We weren't ready at the time, and we didn't, but they shared their, you know, they're open about their electronic architecture, which was different from Backblaze because they had the need for speed. We married the need for speed into cost, created 45 drives, and as they say, rest is history.
Yeah, For a while I kind of thought with everything moving to the cloud, we would not see physical servers grow the way they have been growing. I mean, I fully kind of expect it now. Okay, enterprises, you know, the cloud is not free. You've got storage servers there, but in the home space or in the enthusiast space. Now, part of it is I also do some hard drive mining crypto projects. Chia yeah. is one of those, and of course they cool. yeah. so they build. You know, we build these. I have 100 terabytes here at the house that I'm running Chia on. Now I have those across cases. I've got those in various kind of configurations. Everybody knows I kind of cobble stuff together here in that. But I'm finding in the home space, we're seeing more and more equipment like what you have available going into home labs. Are you guys in the home lab space? I think you have a special or a niche area for that. Can you talk a little bit about the home lab area?
Well, yeah, I sure will. Well, first of all, let me talk about cloud. You touch yeah. on cloud. Yeah. You know, cloud came in and it's been the darling of the stock market. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason for it, because they have gigantic margins. Cloud makes an immense amount of sense in certain situations, smaller amounts of data, and when its usage is highly distributed. And if not, that internet connection is a massive bottleneck in speed and the cost, you know, cloud storage, you know, versus our enterprise offerings. Cloud's about 10 times more expensive per unit. So when you get into large data, it just doesn't make sense. Anyway, you know, the home labs world, we are proudly geeks here, you know, nerd growing up and making stuff and cobbling computers together and whatever else. So we make most of our living by enterprise, vast majority in enterprise. But our people here, we just love the technology we do. We love open source and the like. We had a lot of people who come to us and talk to us about buying our enterprise offerings for home. And the problem was, we described it when we said, when we created home labs, said, you know, it's like the data storage equipment that we make is like, I don't know, it's like 18 wheelers. You know, if you like trucks, they're an 18 wheeler. All's fun and games until you tell your wife you just bought one and want to park it in the driveway. It's too big. It's too loud. It takes too much space, too much fuel. Anyway, on enterprise server in your house, loud, power consuming, and way more than you need. So in home labs, we said we really wanted to you know, and a lot of our customers in enterprise, they go home, they do home labs at home, just like our people. So, you know, what we did in home labs, we downsized the whole thing. I'm going to call it right-sized. You know, and you look out there in home labs, there's lots of, you know, you can buy inexpensive Chinese stuff all you want. You can eBay and buy, you can buy used, you can cobble together things. And to some people, that is the sport of home labs. Totally recognize that. Other people, a little more systems approach in their home labs. And it's about going up the next layer. It's what you run. And it's different people, you know, doing different things. Anyway, we decided we made the I love and I also fear about home labs. They're ruthless. They say what they mean. They will trash you. You're too expensive. That makes no sense. That makes whatever. I appreciate that because it helps us hone ourselves. So we said we're going to bring something to home labs. So it is the heavy duty pickup truck. It's the big, you know, Chev 2500, you know, turbo diesel. And you know, if you just want practical transportation, go buy yourself a little micro car some point. Get a utility trailer, you can haul stuff, right? And you see a lot of people like big pickup trucks. Why? Because they're really nice machinery and they're powerful. You can do stuff with them. They're also just fun to own. So, you know, there's other people in the automotive world, they want to cobble together cars and take them apart. So what we built is the chromed up heavy duty pickup truck of the sector. And you know, it's a higher end machine. You know, we want to take that big, strong, fast thing we're known for in enterprise, bring it to home labs. So that was our whole idea, home labs. And then and just to share out everything we do in enterprise, the software side, it's open source. So it's wide open for you if that's what you want to do in home labs. So that's what we want to bring to home labs. And it's been well received. So.
Yeah, we'll call it the F-350 of servers. Well, you know, it is always interesting in this space, as we've been talking about it, if you think about building an efficient storage server at home, it's not long before you try. And a former co-host of mine who'd love to be here right now talking to you about this, because he's one of those who's contemplating buying one of your chassis for his upgrade. What he did is he cobbled together some equipment and then, you know, got, you know, 20, 25, 30 terabytes of storage. It was like, okay, this is good. And then you start adding things to it. Like, oh, let's run a media server on it. And, oh, let's do some transcoding on it. And then, oh, let's store some, let's do some VMs. You got all this space, right? So let's create some VMs on it. We'll start running. And then all of a sudden, you know, that that little thing that you put together is now melting from the inside because you're doing so much with it. So I think you build the first one, you kind of think, okay, this is enough. And then you think, okay, no, I'm going to build it once. I want it to last a while and it needs to have some horsepower behind it. And especially some throughput from a drive standpoint, like, hey, how do we make sure it's not too slow? I think this is one of the areas earlier on. This was a big mistake I made. I still kind of make it some days, is I do USB attached storage sometimes for stuff. And you know, that's just, while they say the speeds are fast, not so fast, right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and our whole thing, one of the big breaks we did with our friends at Backblaze Cloud Storage, they start off as backup over the internet before the word cloud storage existed.
Yeah, we used them in our space. Backblaze was a big name for a long time.
Yeah, and I've used them. I still have an account with them. Love them, love what they do. But they, you know, it's slow and cold, right? So we get into the you know, that video streaming space. So we do everything we do is what we call direct wired architecture. There's a direct line from storage device in through, you know, say to SAS or NVMe, depending what products you buy, that'll get to the motherboard so you can get PCI level, you know, and then, you know, SAS level connectivity at full speed. So it lets you do cool stuff. You know, if you want to do stuff fast, it's about parallelism. So the Backblaze, that whole thread that they took, like so many large servers, they're multiplexed. They use port multiplexers. Like USB a bottleneck, you port multiplexers, you know, their architecture was built about putting five hard drives down one SATA line.
Right.
And if you're doing cold storage, it's what they want to do. They want to get to lowest cost, right? Because they're selling a consumer product. They want to price it great for the consumer so people would buy it. And our stuff, you know, aiming at enterprise, we just know our customers wanted more speed. So we're direct wired. So you buy our chassis, it's all set up to do direct wired. So you can move at speeds that will blow away your connectivity in your home network.
For sure.
So you're going to have to go out and buy a 25 gigabit switch and you're going to go up. You know, it's like there's the gateway drugs and then you work your way up. So you got to buy a faster switch. Now you get faster clients and you just go up that whole world if you wish.
I always think of as podcasters, and more podcasters are doing video editing. And when you have these big, you know, I make 90-minute files. Now we don't record at 4K, so it's not that necessary. But it is nice to be able to move it quickly to and from the backups. You know, so to put it there, bring it back, or even edit it straight from there. So,
oh, Jim, yeah. Well, you know what? And now you're getting the holy grail. A lot of people use ours in video. Mm-hmm. And user machines video. Like you can take that HL15, set it up with ZFS, and set up your arrays, right? We got a bunch of stuff on sort of best practice architecture for it. And you really want like 2.5 gigabit networking, but when you get to 10, if you have a bunch of spinning drives in an array, your direct from server editing experience will be pretty much indistinguishable from having an internal NVMe drive inside. So, and then you get into this whole workflow thing. Instead of, you know, let you say that word backup. Yeah, and that involves self-discipline, right, and work. And like direct from server, got all your B-roll in the server, you got your project in the server, open it up there. Man, it's a whole different experience you move in. And spinning drives, like far the most cost-effective. And once they get parallel, large block, sequential, indistinguishable over 10 gigabit from NVMe,
yeah, unless you
measure.
There's a lot of guys and ladies maybe listening thinking, oh, yeah, that would be great. Right. There's nothing worse than, you know, doing a video edit and it just hangs up a little bit while the data's coming back. Back in here. That is part one of three parts that we have coming up here with Doug. Let me take a second and replace that. Hopefully, if you're listening live, I've been throwing in chat the links. This is kind of nice, to be honest with you, to have this pre-recorded. I can provide a lot more links while I'm sitting back here and listening to things as we do this.
You did an experiment
compared SSD, a spinner drive, an enterprise drive, a consumer drive. You let them run for a while. Yep. And in the video, I got right to the spot where the SSD failed first. Yep. But I didn't hear about the other drives. Can you, as you think about Doug, the home consumer for a second. Yep. And because the enterprise guys know what drives they're buying. But I think sometimes the home market, especially the enthusiasts, goes like, do I go full enterprise drive? Do I buy them that way? Can I get away with the consumers? Can I buy the cheap used ones? We'll talk about those here in a second. Thoughts on your experience? And you mentioned Backblaze. I mean, they always, I think, quarterly produce a drive failure report that says, hey, these are the drives we have. These are the drives that failed, which is kind of nice because it's real world, you know, 24/7 spinning stuff that's going on. Can you talk about that test that you guys did a little bit?
Sure. And what we did is enterprise spinners versus SSDs. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we've mentioned in a few other videos that stay tuned. So yeah, we totally understood this. We're going to blow out the SSDs. People think SSD, no moving parts, and they're durable. Right. They're incredibly read durable. You can read them forever, but you write them, they have very, very limited write lifetime. So we destroyed them, you know, quickly. All we did is we read the drive, wrote to the drive, read the drive, wrote to the drive. So that was, I don't know how long, a year ago or something like that.
Yeah, September, October, something like that last year.
So the enterprise spinners are still happily reading and writing at the same speed they were. Like the difference in your, and if you look at the amount of data, now they're slower than the SSDs. So, you know, the SSDs obviously did the write cycles before, but we're way beyond where the, where the SSDs are, and enterprise, Interesting. Backblaze. Backblaze and their business model, lowest cost, they use consumer drives. Right? And so they're a great source of information for consumer drives.
Yeah.
I wouldn't, like, you can draw some inference from the results, but your results that you get in your home machine, there's a lot of drives that are actually great drives that, you know, I've talked to your drive manufacturers about it, and I go, it's a great drive. We don't get those back on warranty when they beat them constantly. You know, they're actually the drives would do you fine. I don't think it hurts to stay with the ones that prove durable to that either. I don't think you'll see much difference. But you buy enterprise drives, they're just going to be, you know, they just go. We started, you know, we first started, you know, again, you know, Backblaze, we were selling their servers to people who were followers of Backblaze, and they'd use a lot of consumer drives. But we really started to notice people using consumer drives and really, really be Backblaze puts them to a lot of work. But people are really doing continuous duty on it. They're just failing on them so early. And we way back, you know, 2010-ish, we were using, when we build our servers, we'd always put a set of drives in them, and we would put a drive array in there and set up the drive array and just to test them and make sure everything works. And we noticed that the set of consumer drives we had, we'd get 3 to 6 months out of them before they'd start to go random errors all over the place. And then we bought a set testing sets of enterprise drives, and they just worked for years and years and years and years. So they're premium drives, but they're premium drives for a reason. We'll show you that video to get back to the question. Yeah. We keep referencing it. We'll do it. We're going to take them till they die, but they've been going full speed, right? I think they're going to be, we may have to do an interim video because I think it's going to be years and years and years.
It could be years. Yeah. It could be years before you get those before you get those to fail. You do have that kind of reminds me of a question of around SSD, and you do offer an SSD RAID solution where all the drives are SSD. I think I saw that on your site.
Oh, yeah.
What kind of with knowing that and knowing SSD's tendency on a write, how do you recommend to the customer? Because I think from a home storage standpoint, it would be cool to think like, oh yeah, 100% SSD from my, how fat, right? We get a little enamored by that. I'm assuming maybe there's very specific situations where that is best and maybe some where it's not.
Yeah. So we have in our storage line, enterprise storage line, we have our Storinators, which are all mechanical. We have our FX series hybrids. They're really cool. You start doing drive arrays, EFS drive arrays. If you take the logging and metadata off and put them on SSD, get a huge performance boost, right? And particularly if you get into clustered storage, put Ceph in, you get a huge boost on it. And then we have our Stornado line of all flash and machines, and they're pretty cool. Like our new F16 machine, 16 15 millimeter SSDs, and it's the first tri-mode machine out there, the new standard universal bus management tri-mode. You can plug in SATA, SAS, or NVMe. So interchangeable, hot swap them.
Yeah.
It's ridiculously fast. Like your number of IOPS, I can't quote you the number of IOPS. It's on our website. It's utterly ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And the number, 64 gigabytes per second, so 640 megabits per second is the achievable throughput on that machine.
Mm.
It's so ridiculously fast. So you go, well, what do you use it for? It really is one of those things. And we sell them to, people like military and, the aerospace. And we sell them to high-speed financial trading and e-commerce. Because e-commerce, if you're blasting out a gazillion small files, you get an issue with that. So that's the place that's going. If you want to use that full throughput, 640 gigabits per second. That's a lot, 100 gigabit lines, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, you know, and there's a few people making switches up to that single line up to that speed, but it gets pretty ridiculous. But again, you don't have that write durability. So, but you know, I mean, if you're an enterprise, you know, it's doing something that's earning money, could you replace the drives as they go? That's a strategy. Home, I don't know, you know, it's fun at home. Instant access, you know, the random access speed is great. But I tell you, if you get a array of spinning drives, you're a fraction of the cost for the given capacity, and the vast majority of your workloads, you'll never notice a difference in it.
We used to rip movies and MP3s right back, like, it seems like 1,000 years ago. It was like 10, right? And guys would store all their movies locally. I would think that would be a, you know, because it's write once, read many times, and you wouldn't necessarily like task that SSD so hard of, you know, read, write, erase, read, write, erase constantly on that. So I could think of some situations maybe for the home lab where that might be, where you're storing data that you're going to access and not change necessarily all the time. But you're right. Some getting spinners in an array or in a RAID and doing them, that can be super fast. Just
let me throw you another place that arrays go. We have we do virtual computing as well. So Proxmox, and we're an enterprise supporter of support for Proxmox. We sell systems. We have our Proxinator line of machines. And what they do is they combine, we have compute only, and you can go into a Ceph cluster, and we sell big virtual compute with arrayed clustered storage and clustered Proxmox. But we make a line of machines that have, storage and compute in the same box. Something really cool happens, and especially you start putting SSDs on it. When you have PCI bus speed from NVMe in, your virtual machines, and again, it's heavily weighted, you know, you spin up a virtual machine, it's heavily weighted to read. And the speed arrayed NVMe is utterly ridiculously fast. So yeah, our Proxinators are, and if you're doing virtual computing, have an NVMe on that is, you get a boost.
you get some good speed. We are also, we get a lot of Unraid users in our community. We've had the folks from Unraid on several times on the show. And I imagine that would run, and they just introduced, I think, with version 7 ZFS, that would run, I imagine, on this gear would run really, really well. Is that, would you say?
Oh, absolutely. And we have lots of people put Unraid in. We had a relationship with them with a long time ago, and I love what they do. And it just kind of, you know, it was a home lab world. People kind of did it on their own. So we haven't done that much stuff together, but no, I love Unraid. I think they do really, really cool stuff. And yeah, you put it on one of our, you know, something like, one of the fast NVMe machines. Yeah. You'd have a great time with that.
Yeah. It's staring at my Unraid dashboard right now thinking, oh man, how much more storage could I get with one of these? One of the things that was interesting to me, you guys have been spending some time talking about, there's a lot of counterfeitism going on in the hard drive space, particularly around enterprise drives, where drives may be showing up with a new label on top of them, but they're not necessarily new. Listen, when I buy my drives now, I buy them on, you know, I'll buy them on Amazon. I'll buy them renewed knowing they say they're going to have 3 to 4 or 5 years worth of spinning on this, but I'm buying them at, you know, half the price of a new drive. I know what I'm getting. You're talking about something different, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, and the problem is, like, that's legit. You know, we have a product line we call the Destroyinator, and the Destroyinator is it's data wiping, and certified data wiping for drive recycling. Right, you either put them in the crusher, or you recycle
them. Drill some holes in them.
You know, guys
just drill holes through them.
And I'm like, yeah, please recycle drives. There's so many people. You know, I spent the early part of my life, you know, dreaming of owning a computer for the start of it, and then dreaming, you know, always more, right? And You know, remember when I was able to afford my first 286 board and how exciting that was. But, you know, used hard drives is a wonderful thing. But they should have a label on that says used hard drives. And the problem that's happening now, and you know, and Amazon, you know, as Amazon has really become a network, you know, the most of the sellers on there are honest, but there's plenty of people like through Amazon, other channels, eBay, you never know what you get. And even up through Amazon now, we're hearing of people who bought from a vendor. And next thing you know, they discover that, you know, we're on the enterprise side is what we talk about. But a lot of enterprise drives going back and recycled because they're so durable. Somebody somewhere, you know, decides, well, if we can just counterfeit some new labels, they put new labels on them, they sell them for that really premium enterprise drive price. I'm a deep believer if you pay for an enterprise hard drive at new price, you should damn well get a new hard drive. So yeah, the a lot of, like everything, hard drives are interesting. You know, they're a commodity item and they have value. So they're almost like currency, you know? We had a lot of problems when we first started selling enterprise hard drives that we had scam buyers. We get somebody would order, you know, 20 hard drives. And they give us credit card. And, you know, first time it happened, one of our people just happened to, and why they did, I don't know, but they went on Google Earth and had a street view look at where it was going. They said, that doesn't look like whatever corporation. And we called FedEx and stopped the shipment. And sure enough, the credit card came back a day later, said, you know, counterfeit credit card. So we've had problems on that side. And then, of course, on the vendor side, you know, people cheat on all sides of the, you know, the commerce relationships. And yeah, now we're having this problem with, you know, fake labels and things like that. So yeah, and become a real problem.
Bring me back in here for this part two there. Hopefully you guys are enjoying this interview with Doug Milburn. The second part I found very, very interesting as we were talking about counterfeit hard drives. You know, I mentioned in the program, I've been spending some time, you know, I buy a lot of the drives that I use for Chia. I buy them used knowing they've got 30 or 40,000 hours of spinning on them. They're coming from data centers. I get them for, you know, I'm trying to get them at the $10, you know, $10 terabyte price point to get it. So, you know, 10 terabytes, I'm paying $100. In the last month or two, that's been hard to get, right? Those prices have gone up since all the stuff that's been going on since January. They're coming back down again, which is kind of interesting. So, but that's not what we're talking about here, right? I mean, we're spending some time thinking about these are actual drives. I think in a lot of cases, I did a little bit of research on this. They've been in data centers for a couple years, maybe two, right? 18 months, whatever. They're getting kicked out for whatever reason, and then they're getting a new label slapped on them. We'll talk some more about that. Hopefully you guys are enjoying this style of interview. It's kind of fun to be behind the scenes and just listening as well. You know, when you're doing the interview, we did this a couple weeks ago, I don't hear every single word. And today it's kind of nice to hear those words as well. Let me get you to part three, and then we'll have some conversation there at the end. Folks, if you're listening live in the chat, love to hear your comments as well. Brian, thanks for checking in. As well on that. But if you got some questions, drop them in there. We'll cover it here at the end. Let me drop over to part three of this, and we'll catch you here at the end. You provide some software. There's a Windows version, a Mac version, a Linux version that allows you to kind of check these drives, which is something I think I used before I saw your software. I was using Crystal Disk. Yeah. To check those, yeah. Spin it up, and you can kind of go through it. Talk a little bit. Obviously, you wrote the software because people were asking for it. What kind of response have you been getting back? It gives you a report at the end. It tells you the number of hours, yeah. You kind of how long you think that drive has been out there. Have you been getting any feedback on that?
We had a bunch of people using it and checking their drives. And we've had a lot of downloads of it. And all it does, you know, it's not magic. There's a set of routines. The smart register is inside a drive, which most of your audience probably know smart register are, but there's registers in every hard drive that track things like power on hours and cycles and reads and writes and everything else. And very, very simply, you know, Transparent's just a simple program. You know, it calls a read of the smart registers and it displays them for you. And it'll display every drive that it can find. And then what we did is we spoke to our drive manufacturers and said, what are the acceptable numbers for a drive coming from the factory?
Mm.
So that, you know, and that information is embedded in there. You can look at it yourself. It's pretty obvious. You know, if it's got a couple thousand hours, it's not a new drive. And so anyway, you get this, download it, throw it on there. There's lots of other ways to do it, but this is a nice convenient way to do it. Download the software. It's free. It's open source too. So we love open sourcing everything we do. And so it's on there and you can look at it and see what your drive that you just bought is. So worth doing.
I know it's always scary when you get quoted for your things that you've said on your videos, but I'll quote you, Doug. You said, it's software. It should be free. So guys make that available. Do you, I've heard some folks are wiping that smart data on the drives as well. So the drive's been used. They go in and flash the smart, you know, the smart registry or whatever it is. So it sets it back to zero. So it looks new. Have you heard anything like, how do we prevent that? Or what does that do? Or can you see that?
What we've heard, and again, I'm not going to say any of it being reliable or not, but we have not heard directly of it. I've heard people say that.
Yeah.
And we speak to drive manufacturers. They say no.
Okay.
But at the same time, say drive manufacturers talk about, I just think in the enterprise space and some of the vendors try to make things extremely proprietary so they can charge 2, 3, 4 times the price. And, one of the major enterprise storage vendors flashes their drives somehow. And I've had to accommodate directly from an engineer at one of the major hard drive manufacturers. We can't figure out how the hell they're managing to flash our hard drives. So I'll never say never. I wish I could tell you more. That's all we know on it. And so the solution we say, and again, great respect for the home lab market. I totally get it. Been there, done that. You know, it's a hobby. It's your own cash. And you're shopping for bargains, and you just do have to beware when you shop for bargains. Like, there's no guarantee when you're creeping around the back alleys of eBay and the like of what you're going to get. Basically, if you're an enterprise or a business and it's important, you should darn well get a verified supply chain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like us, we're one of those, lots of them out there that are verified supply chain. Commerce, buyer beware, right? You just have to watch. But I feel so bad for those people who get ripped. The good thing is, if you buy an enterprise hard drive, you know, and it is used, it probably could be good for a long time, especially in a home labs usage, because very few people in home labs, unless doing something really special, are ever going to tax that aren't things. You'd still be pissed off about getting ripped off, but
I often purchase from Go Hard Drive. They're kind of that in that discount space, used drive space. I kind of expect those drives to come with 30,000 to 40,000 hours on them. They're coming out of locations where they're spinning. They're on. They may not actually have a lot of rights to them. You get the right in that smart data that you're talking about. You get the right and the number of rights that have been made to it, the hours it's been turned on, the number of times it's been turned off and turned back on again. So you get that idea. I check them when they come in. I've been getting 65, 70. I get almost double the life of those drives than after I bought them. Yeah. So for me, it's a great deal. They're about half the price of maybe even less from an enterprise standpoint, but half the price of retail consumer drives. And I've got some pretty good luck with it. I haven't had a lot of them go bad. It's been a good way to buy drives.
I think it's brilliant. You know, what are you using it for? If it was mission critical and you're running a company with 1,000 people, your system in job, you're not going to go there. You do it at home and you go, well, what's the downside if it did fail on you? You go, you can survive it. And assuming, you know, pretty sophisticated people in that world and you're not committing critical data to a used drive, and that, you know, RAID and backup are in use. So yeah, what's your downside? You know,
yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
And you know, it lets you extend your reach in your hobby, and yeah. and it's yeah. great way to do it.
Yeah. yeah. For a while, the prices were really starting to come down, and we were getting to the sweet spot for me. Last couple months been tough in the hard drive space. I think we've seen those, not totally get out of hand, but move back into a less, at least for me and the consumer side, a less attractive price point than it had been, from a hard drive standpoint.
I think the thing of offshore manufacturing and the tariff side of it, if I can use the evil T word, that's starting to creep into that.
Yeah, you
know, and if nothing else, the uncertainty was priced in early.
For sure. Well, and even in the secondary market, I thought, okay, these are drives that exist. They've already been bought. They're just being pulled from, you know, they're being pulled from US locations, not even reformatted, but wiped for whatever reason. And those, you know, the demand for those used drives must have increased at the same time every time everybody realized. So I was like, I'll hold off. I had a couple more I was going to purchase, and then I said, I'll just hold off for now. We'll see how
things go. You know what? I'm a lover of free markets.
Yeah.
It's done so much good for us. Sometimes there's a downside. And, you know, and we talk about price gouging, people putting their prices up early, tariffs aren't really on and whatever else. But I tell you, from having been in business, we get terrified. Sorry, a little pun in there, maybe. you look at it, you say, nice what happens if my costs increase dramatically? And we get caught with our pants down. We can't pay for it. We go broke, right?
Yeah.
And likewise, people buying. Oh, what happens if the market dries up? So people go buy, and it all pushes prices up and down. And you know, when there's a surplus, I mean, the electronics industry, we've all made out like bandits and everything to do with electronics computing, because oversupply comes in. You know, technology comes in at premium price, and next, you know, a couple of years later, it's like just got commodity margins, right? So that's all good. There's ups and downs, and they get pissed off at a certain time when the markets tighten. But in general, it served us well, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's certainly interesting times. Interesting times.
Interesting times.
For you, listen, for you and I heard you say this when we first came on. When we were kids, we dreamt about days like this, and we're living them right now, right?
Yep.
I mean, the fact that we're just here on a video conference recording. We could be live and streaming to the whole world. We're recording this as we speak, but it will get streamed at some point. Those were kinds of things as kids we just dreamt about, right? You said your first board was a 286. My first was a 386. So I'm maybe a smidge younger than you. And then, but that was, I remember getting that and thinking, I remember the first time getting on ICQ and being able to text people around how great that was, right?
Look, just magical. You know, I started programming at 6502, 1 megahertz clocks. That's megahertz, young people. It's not gigahertz, that's megahertz. And it's just amazing. The software development, I did a lot of software development in years gone by, and the software development tools now are amazing. And that's good. We're blessed. The world's good.
No, for sure. Hey, last question for you, Doug, and I'll let you roll on to your day. You also have a product called the Destroyinator. I love all your Nader pieces, the Destroyinator. How important, and it's a piece of equipment you can load multiple drives into and wipe, right? Securely wipe, I'm assuming. How important at the consumer level would you say it is that we're doing some kind of, you know, before we let that hard drive go, that we do some kind of wipe on it or some kind of secure. I mean, certainly there's programs that'll set it back to zeros and ones. There's some of those kinds of things. But your thoughts on that from a consumer standpoint on drives and security and those things?
Oh, yeah. It's what do you want people to know? That hard drive goes out there and it's not wiped. And I mean, there's a bunch of wiping tools. You know, the Destroyinator is about doing it at, you know, production scale.
Scale.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Scale. Yeah. So it's not relevant to the consumer market. The consumer market, go get Kill Disk is one of many you can do. And they got write algorithms. You pick which algorithm you want. That's what it does. It writes ones and zeros over it. You do that several times. You cannot, you know, even the, you know, probably the spook agencies probably couldn't get your data back. So it goes, you know, what's on it? You know, if you got your personal data and your credit card numbers gone in and stuff cached all over the place and everything about your life, do you want it known or don't you? Yeah, I recommend you wipe it. If you know, wipe it or destroy it, you know, one or the other, yeah. Unless you're good with it going out there. Wiping is dead easy. No.
Yeah. If the drive's broken, is it secure?
No, absolutely not. Okay. No, you know, and it absolutely not as a generality. It could be that, you know, the platter is so gouged or, you know, smashed or something like that, but it could just be something electronic, in which case, you know, in which case somebody can fix the electronics, get it off there. And you say, what's their motivation? Yeah, the probable scenario is you got a trashed hard drive, it goes in the garbage, you plug it in a computer and it's not working. Somebody's not going to do that because they don't have a reason for it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, probability, you know, and then you go, well, what do you have on it? Do you have a secret to your, you know, your life's investments or something like that? Yeah, you probably want to smash the thing up more.
Or the Bitcoin that you forgot to take off of it before all you did.
That Bitcoin, yeah.
Before you get fit that. I said last question, but one more for you, Doug, before we go. Future for 45 drives, anything that you want to talk about coming up in the future? Anything you want to promote as far as what may be coming or you want to highlight?
You know, our enterprise line, incremental improvement on that, lots of move towards that really high performance NVMe stuff and virtual computing as, you know, the big spinner machines and hybrids are, anyway, it's all great. Great line of business. We're actually growing at, just finished the half year at 96% growth.
Oh, wow.
So it's, nice. Yeah. It's pretty cool. It's really having a great time. And what we want to do is just want to maintain that. We still feel like a smaller company. We shall maintain that forever. Home Labs. We got a few new things creeping out of Home Labs. And some of them aimed at the sort of video editing and music world of some silent machines coming out there. And that virtual computing, you know, the good people at VMware are just beating their customers over the head with a club. And so that part of it's growing like crazy for us. So yeah, that's the story on it. Love the space. We love Home Labs. You know, Home Labs is not a big profit maker for us or anything else like that. But we are dedicated to that. Two reasons we're dedicated. Number one, it's fun. And number two, I mean, you know, the reason we went in there, we had so many fans that say a lot of times they either just follow us or they use us at work. And they said, we'd really love to be able to get that big, strong, fast at home. So we're dedicated. We love, absolutely love the space.
That's great. Yeah, that's great. And it's perfect audience here. Many of the listeners have, you know, multi terabyte. When I say multi, I mean 50s of terabyte, you know, for a home server is a lot, right? I mean, when you're thinking about, you go to work, you know, that you're just getting started, but at home to have 25, 30 terabytes of storage, I mean, that's a little bit of data there, right?
Yeah.
Although, what do you think of these? I mean, we've just crossed, but we're getting into the 20s now when we think about terabyte single drives. When you think about the consumer buying a 20 terabyte drive and putting all their data on one drive that has the propensity to fail, do you think we're in a better spot where it's better for the consumer to have two 10 terabyte drives with some kind of backup on it than just thinking, hey, I bought the coolest 20 terabyte drive, I can put all this data on it. I don't know, any thoughts on from a consumer perspective?
Oh yeah, from a consumer perspective, tying into single drive, it's like, let's get a RAID array going. It, you know, and again, are you okay if that drive just packs up and leaves you someday with and your data is not accessible anymore? So no, I'd be RAIDing out everything, you know, and even, you know, of course it's subject to budget. You know, for everybody, you know, RAID, redundancy, you're losing storage efficiency. This is going to cost you more. But man, oh man, if you could afford to just lose that data or even your machine configuration or whatever else, I totally believe in distributing it up as much as you can. Yeah. That's what I do at home. I run my home server has four drives in it and ZFS array. And I'm like, good. And then back it up, get it off the machine. Say, we have a great video out there actually on data storage strategy, which is as relevant for home and home labs as it is for enterprise, about thinking about all the things that, can imperil your data and how to set up your storage machine to look after it. So you might want to look at that. You know, the last stage is meteor proofing. You get the ultimate machine with ZFS and multiple arrays and, you know, a live snapshotted and then a backup array. And then you still go, what happens if a meteor strikes my house?
Yeah.
It's gone. And then you need that offsite somehow to be solid as a rock. But you decide what you do and what your budget is and what you want to do. But that simple thing, one mechanical hard drive, one SSD. This day and age, never do it.
Yeah. Right now, it seems like 10 terabytes is the sweet spot for pricing when we think about price to value or price to terabyte. 10 seems good. It had gotten down to like 100 for these drives that I buy, these used drives, like $100 per 10 terabytes. Yeah. And that was a nice price. Now that's gone up to like 150, but they all went up. So if you're in that space, you know, you can't get around it, but that seemed like a nice, you know, three of those in a RAID with an SSD cache. That seems like a pretty nice 30 terabytes. Well, you're going to get 24 out of that once you rate them together, but that seems like a pretty nice space to be, I think.
Totally concur with you. I mean, you know, and then sorry, one more war story.
Yeah, I love it.
You know,
love
when
it.
You think back to the old days, and I think when I was an undergraduate, physics department bought, you know, it was be 82 or something. They bought a IBM PC. It was actually a clone that they bought in 82, right year after the PC came out, and then they bought a 10 megabyte hard drive to go in it. And I think the whole thing was like $5,000 or $6,000 for the whole thing. So yeah, life is good.
Drive though was like this big. I mean, it was giant in there. I had one of those for a while that I just kept as a museum piece. I think I've stored it somewhere, but yeah, they are gigantic. Speaking of, I keep saying one more question, but Doug, thank you for hanging out with us on this. What do you think the physical size limitation for storage is in this 5.25-inch space that we have? Or even, you know, when you think of enterprise drives, right? A lot of those are 2.5. Where does that end? And as you're looking at hard drive technology going forward, are we going to need a new form factor for this?
Well, you know, that's fascinating. So as we've had our Crater summits last couple of years, we've had our Seagate distributor engineer who worked for Seagate for years and years to talk about that. And they're at the mass, you know, the drive capacities you're at is pretty much at the limit of what you can, in terms of glass platters, what you can stuff in there. And you can't put any more platters in them. Right. So as capacity is going up, they're into hammer technology, heat affected, magnetic, whatever. So, you know, what these hammer drives, which are now in the market, and it's like magic. They heat the spot up to 700 degrees Celsius for nanoseconds as the magnetic field hits it, and it makes the magnetic domain smaller. And now they're going to be able to go up 50 terabytes, 60 terabytes on a drive and beyond. Wow. And that's the 30s coming out, our hammer drives. Okay. And anyway, so that's what the technology in hard drives is so incredibly amazing. We take them for granted so much.
Yeah.
But your question, if you want to get bigger in one device, no. So then you get to another question, Jim, and I'll throw this in.
Yeah.
As we, you know, work in our enterprise space, the whole issue of having 30 terabytes in one package with one doorway to get in and out becomes interesting. Mm-hmm. Because if you want fast access to your data, and you want to pull out a bunch of that, you're way better off to have an array of smaller devices for a given amount of data, because now I got multiple gateways. That parallelism in a good ZFS array will get you out ridiculously fast. And when you get to 30, you're actually getting to a space where if a hard drive fails, the amount of time you pull one out, put a new one in, your RAID array starts to heal itself, the times get so damn long, you're up against practicality on that. So it really is some interesting trade-offs. And we look at that and we go, 30 terabyte hard drives and up may only be useful for fairly cold data storage. Now, I don't know. We'll see. We're trying to deal with that and wrap our heads around it. But we really, you know, said we're kind of, you know, like below 20 is, you know, just getting to a point. Like, how long do you want to be able to commission? So if you do a Z1 array and I got that one level redundancy, you know, if I get a Z2, Z3 or something like that, I'm a little better off. And if you're using consumer hard drives and you're doing anything with RAID on it, the consumer hard drives drop out fast enough that it becomes really serious. If you're using enterprise hard drives, they don't go that much, but you're getting up to that point. So a lot of things to be considered in it.
Yeah. Yeah, I just kind of wonder if we're self-limiting ourselves by thinking, and I'm sure it's way smarter people than me have thought about this, but that 5.25-inch size, if that got bigger, would it make a difference? You know, we're kind of married to that space. I mean, you sell chassis with that space. Yep. So yeah, we would have to, if we made them bigger, we'd have to, you know, create a lot of new form factor stuff would change. But kind of makes me wonder if we need to rethink the, you know, and maybe not just the width, but maybe the thickness of them need to change. What if we had a double-sided, you know, what if you had a double density hard drive that was, you know, whatever that is, 4 inches thick, and to get more space in there? I don't know.
Well, if you're fundamentally stuck to the 200 megabytes a second that come out of one of these things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you put too much in there, it's one doorway, build a larger and you got one doorway.
That's so true.
I don't think it's going to go there for that reason. Yeah. You know, and then, you know, Seagate did their double interface drives, and you go, but it's sort of, you try to figure out how to use that, and it becomes interesting. So no, I we're right in this fascinating place. Yeah. My bet is the doorway issue, if I could call it that.
Yeah, I like it. I like that thinking.
It's going to be defining, because I looked at it and I said in my head, I'm going, okay, we go solid state, we have flash. Are we going to have just one gigantic device? Because we've seen some huge flash devices come down the pipe at us. And then you're going, okay, you have one NVMe interface in that for how many, you know, 100 and some terabytes, put in a great big thing and put a bunch of chips on there. And say, why don't we just, like, what's the economic advantage of stuffing it into one package and putting one doorway into it? And you go, well, let me parallel it out. And then I get this massive speed, and then I get RAID, you know, security and whatever else. So you get where my bets are.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a good thought. I often don't think about the idea of it's still a single door and you can build the tower a mile high. They still have to come out of the door. You can, or even you can, you know, widen it out or lengthen it out, but they still got to come through that door. We still got some limitations there. Doug, I've held you long enough. Thanks for spending the time with me. Great to meet you. We'll look forward to all the great things there at 45 Drives and all the cool stuff that's coming out. Congratulations on everything that you've done with the company. And I think it's a great fit for what we're doing here. And I know a lot of folks appreciate it. So thanks for coming on today. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you, Jim. You ever want to talk about anything? I'm always happy to. Yeah.
I appreciate that. I may hit you again. All right. Thanks, Doug.
Talk to you.
Stay around for a second. All right. Big thanks to Doug Milburn, who joined us on that interview. That was super fun to watch again. Let me get the right setup here. We'll remove the video from before. Big thanks to Doug, who joined me for that as well. And for the time that he spent, for the hour he spent, like I said, we had decided we were going to do a 30-minute interview that turned into really about an hour. And it was kind of nice. You know, one of the things that got me thinking right there at the end about this idea of storage versus throughput. And for a lot of folks, that's not new. But it is, you know, as we think about, you know, PCI and the growth of PCI and its throughput, we then that allows us to have, when we think about larger and larger drives, that allows those drives to get a little bigger and get that data off faster, right, from it. Or it, in the word he used, parallelism, right, on that is to make sure, you know, in some cases, it probably makes more sense when the throughput is throttled to have, and throttled's not the right word, but it constricted, right, to think about then you need multiple lanes coming out and can the processor handle those. certainly what's going on with Apple's rendition of the Mac and them bringing everything onto a single bus. I think we're trying to get away from some of those things, but it just got me thinking about, for the home lab space or for the home space, what's the sweet spot of hard drive size and motherboard and throughput. And I'm assuming we're bringing this in, you know, for most home labs, these are SATA connections, right? You could go SAS if you wanted to. Most folks aren't using SAS controllers to get that done. Although SAS drives are really cheap right now. I've thought about getting a SAS controller just so I can buy SAS drives. They're super cheap, right? The cheaper, so to speak, right, than they are right now. But a great conversation. So Doug, thanks for joining me. I will probably see if I can get him back here at some point in time, maybe in the fall. We'll have him back to talk about drives. Jim Shoemaker says, nice discussion. It was fun. I enjoyed that. It was kind of fun. It was a Monday morning when we recorded that. I wasn't feeling very well. You can kind of hear that in my voice, but and Brian checking it out says, I really enjoyed the deep dive. Thanks. Yeah. Great discussion. Check it out. I left a lot of links for those of you listening to the live version of this. I left a lot of links in that. I'll bring all those links over to the show notes here on 647. And if you want to check those out, you can do that as well. Great conversation, Doug. Again, thanks for joining me on this. Super cool to have you. Got me thinking. I mentioned last week, by the way, let me make a quick correction. I mentioned last week we had Mark on the show. Mark Robson was on the show. And I think in the post show, I'm not sure if I made the show, the live, or it made the recorded podcast, or if we did it in the post show. We were talking about hard drive space, and I talked about a company called, and I called them Walter Panther, and it's called Water Panther. You can check that out on Amazon. They actually have some of the best priced hard drives, 16 terabyte hard drive, $165 right now. Now, used drives, like in all that conversation, right? Used drives, they've got some time on them. They got some spinning on them. 16 terabyte drives. I was talking in the interview about buying some drives that had 4 or 5 years worth of spinning on them, maybe 30,000 hours, 35,000 hours on there, something like that. These have been like, they were, as many of these were released in 2023. And so they're 16 terabyte hard drives. So I haven't bought one yet. I've been kind of waiting to see where the prices would go. They'd been up and then been dropping. And I might pick up one of those 16 terabyte drives just to give it a try. I never heard of Water Panther before, but they're a renewed hard drive. You know, Amazon guarantees them. Here's the problem. From Go Hard Drives, I talked about this in chat a second ago, from Go Hard Drives, sometimes they get a 3 or 5 year warranty on those. And I think I've used one once to get those taken care of. You can get that through Amazon. These Water Panther, they're 90 days. So it's kind of kept me from pulling the trigger on those. I'm just not sure I want to go with it. So we'll have to see. I've been waiting on the pricing, and we'll see where they go. So big thanks to 45 Drives and Doug for coming on. And Doug, I may have you back on. So appreciate you spending time with me on that Monday morning. I had allergies, or I've gotten better since then. So thanks for that as well. On our way out, I want to remind you, if you want to join us, the conversation in the Discord group, you can head out to theaverageguy.tv/Discord. You can always send me an email, jim@theaverageguy.tv. And then don't forget, theaverageguy.tv platform, web, and media hosting powered by Maple Grove Partners. Get secure, reliable, high-speed hosting from folks that you know and you trust. That's Christian over there at Maple Grove Partners. He's back. Do I have him scheduled yet? I think he should be coming off paternity leave here shortly. You know, they just had a baby, and we need to get him back on the program. I need to get him on. I'll ping him here, and we'll get him to come back and update us on the story. But check it out today. If you need high-speed hosting, you can get it as little as $10 a month. MapleGrovePartners.com. For those of you who joined us live, thanks for coming out. For those of you listening on the podcast, I always appreciate your feedback. Always appreciate you just listening. Appreciate you coming out, and appreciate you being a part of of the network. Coming up here in the next couple weeks, TJ Huddleston is coming in, and he's a partner of Gavin Campbell's over there at hometech.fm. We're going to talk a little bit about home automation, but he's got a lot of stuff going on. We're going to check in with him. Kevin Schoonover joins me on June 5th. Uyghur is back on the 12th. They're getting ready to have a baby as well. And then Dave Hamilton from MacGeek Gab is joining me on June 26th. I'd love to have you. If you've never come out for a live show, we moved the time. Today it was a little different just because I got home and things weren't ready here, so I needed to delay an hour. I was like, tonight I can move it an hour and not disturb anybody. Generally, we've moved the live time 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern out here at theaverageguy.tv/live. And it's always fun to have you come out live and join the show. So join us sometime. If you've never done it before, get out here on a Thursday night. We'd love to have you here and available for that as well. Obviously, not much of a post show. If you're live and you want to ask, if you got any questions you want to throw in the chat room, if you want to just want me to discuss anything, you're welcome to do that. But obviously, without a co-host, not a lot to talk about. But that's okay. With that, we'll say goodbye, everybody.